listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents Blessed Are the Troublemakers, the sermon by the Reverend Rick Skidmore, presented on Sunday, January 18th, 2015.
So why is it that those who talk about peace and living peaceably always seem to cause so much trouble and commotion in the world? I mean, you just heard from two of the most proficient troublemakers the world has ever known. The Apostle Paul, arrested shortly after he wrote his famous letter to the Romans, he spent 4 years in prison, first in Caesarea and then in Rome, and then he was executed, beheaded for the crime of sedition against the empire. Paul was a colossal troublemaker. I mean, read the book of Acts, not content to stir up things in Jerusalem and Damascus and Antioch. Paul traveled through much of the Mediterranean world, in short, causing riots and dissension and strife throughout the greater part of the known world of his time. And more often than he left the place peacefully, he was run out of town with an angry mob at his heels. And yet here in Romans, as in so many of Paul's writings, we find him speaking about what? Patience, love, kindness, forgiveness, peace. This passage from Romans, I think, is really one of the most beautiful appeals for love and affection and community that appears anywhere in the history of literature. And in his book, Why We Can't Wait, Dr. King says that he tried to pattern his letter from the Birmingham jail after Paul's letter to the Romans. Certainly, Paul and Martin King were not alone in their efforts to stir things up. All prophets and reformers and peacemakers, from Jeremiah to Gandhi, to Dorothy Day, to Cesar Chavez, to Oscar Romero, all of them were troublemakers in their time who spoke about peace and justice and equality and love. Our world doesn't honor or revere people who demonstrate for peace and justice, who preach conciliation over national sovereignty. But these brave souls do, for the most part, make up our list of heroes and leaders who have shaped the history of our world, who have formed our consciences, who have set noble aims and goals for us to aspire to. Some people would contend that maybe these men and women have set goals too high, that they've really caused more grief and confusion than if people had been left with, you know, simpler expectations to ponder. In any case, we can't seem to escape them, these troublemakers who are forever talking about peace and living peaceably. In fact, I think we face their dilemma directly if we try, any of us try, to walk any kind of spiritual path in this world. Insofar as it depends upon you, try to live peaceably with everyone, says Paul, which is really both the theme and the dilemma, I think, of the message this morning. How can we live peaceably with ourselves, with each other, with the world at large, and at the same time pursue these principles and directions that Jesus calls us to? I think these words from Paul in his letter to Rome hits us with all the emotional appeal of any great ideal or vision. If only we could find a community or build a world by the principles that Paul's talking about here in this passage. And clearly he means for us as followers of Jesus that we're to live by these principles whether or not the world chooses to live by them. In truth, I think such a reality can never be found. It always has to be built. And it can only be built if we choose the way of peace and then walk that path until the reality has been realized and fashioned. Only here's the catch. The kind of community that Paul and Dr. King are talking about really flies in the face of so much of the present way of the world. And I doubt if there's any need here to stop and document that fact. So the struggle to live at peace in our world really is, for us, I think, two-dimensional. It's both the way we would like the world to be, and it's a value judgment about how people need to and ought to treat each other in the here and now. So it's both a vision for the future as well as an ethic for the now, for the present. And to see the dilemma clearly, you only have to wonder, how in the world are you going to live peaceably with people who have not chosen peace as one of their own values or goals? How do you live honestly with people who have not chosen honesty as a value or a goal? How can you love your neighbor if your neighbor sees love as no more than a weakness to be exploited? And here's where Paul and Dr. King leave very little room for ambiguity. To embrace the ethic of Jesus means that you go on loving and you take your knocks. You take what comes. You suffer the consequences and you hope that your love by God's power, in God's power and time, will be enough to show and inspire others to choose love as a value for themselves. And I know this sounds hopelessly out of place in our post 9/11 world, where aggression and retaliatory response have achieved new heights in popularity. But the plain fact is, living for peace and honesty and love and justice is always trouble. It's always trouble at any place and time, because it's not the code by which this world runs. And so we're hard-pressed, you and I, to make it our own code. And we always seem to stalemate ourselves by trying to reduce the gospel principles of peace and justice, you know, down to something that's more habitable for us, more manageable, down to something that will make us look good and kind and loving, but at the same time enable us to go right on trying to get by in the world any way we can. Spirituality is about change. It's about transformation. It's about transformation through love, through the power of love. If you try to live under the inspiration and the influence of Jesus, if you try to take seriously what Jesus took seriously, you're never going to convince the world around you that your intentions are, of all things, peaceful. Because the world, again, has a very different idea of what peace is about. I mean, there's a kind of peace that comes from indifference, from ignorance, kind of peace that comes from ignorance, as in ignorance is bliss. And there's a kind of peace that comes from despair, giving up, capitulation. Certainly in this way you can be at peace, you know, with the policies and the groups and the institutions in our world in a way that Jesus and others wouldn't have tolerated, would not have stood for, would have stood against. You can live peaceably with other people by keeping all of your relationships shallow. You can live peaceably by turning your back on people whose opinions are different than yours. You can live peaceably by letting evil and deceit have its way in the world. You can live peaceably by sitting passively by while the world gets rocked by ideologies that seek to punish and destroy anybody who won't fall in line to their way of thinking. You can live peaceably by the principle of non-involvement and a determination to stay out of conflict and trouble, whatever the cost. You can live peaceably, in short, by turning your back on love and all of its challenges, by learning to understand every point of view but not having any one of your own, by accepting or acquiescing to popular opinion no matter what the repercussions or consequences. And then you can quote, "Blessed are the peacemakers," and think that the passage is talking about you. Jesus proclaimed not the peace of passivity, but this high, life-breathing peace that burns at the heart of those who are willing to do battle, as he did battle, to bring to pass God's loving, healing, forgiving will for all of the world and its people. Jesus taught that the way to live at peace with others is through this practice of radical love. Love, not as a specific way of acting, but on a very practical level, love as a relationship, as covenant, a bond between people that means that you're committed to explore life together and to share what you find in openness and honesty and to care about each other and to want the best for each other and to never write anybody off. For Jesus and Gandhi and Dr. King, countless others, you know, love was a strategy, not some easy, gooey optimism, but this unfailing belief in the human capacity for transformation through the power of love, through the power of God. The ethic of love, as Jesus teaches it, is not some prefabricated way of responding or behaving. It's not a look that you practice in the mirror. The world teaches you that love means, you know, getting people to be a little nicer to each other. Love as being nice and approving and agreeable with people for as long as you can, and then when you can't, then you walk away or you walk over them. But Jesus calls us to be real to each other, with each other, straight with each other, and suffer the consequences of that. Sometimes those consequences can be severe. Forgive. Forgive. And go on struggling and exploring together. I mean, that's the only way we're ever going to learn very much about this life, or as Paul puts it, the only way we can grow in the full stature of Christ. Otherwise, we're forever, you know, shutting down or running away when things get difficult. We're falling back always, you know, the safety of the superficial. So love doesn't just mean that we're free to hug and kiss and comfort and compliment and support each other. It also means laying it on the line with each other when something seems or feels wrong. You know, daring to get into it with each other when there are differences and bitterness and misunderstandings. Only love doesn't walk out if things don't go our way. I think it's just as much a mark of love to confront a person or a group or a nation when something that is causing division or anger between you as it is to hug or compliment or congratulate them when you feel delighted. But it's never loving to be silent when everything is breaking the hell apart for lack of courage and community. So in short, peacemakers are forever causing trouble because they put so much stock in the power of love to change lives. And my prayer is that more and more we will become that people who learn by practical everyday experience how to relate in Christian love, how to be peacemakers with each other and the world without mocking the meaning of peace. People who see peace not as the absence of conflict, but as the presence of love. And to do this always requires some daring. To be faithful to God requires breaking or disregarding most of the conventional patterns of behavior and acceptance and getting along with people that have long become our habits and customs in this world. And whenever someone or some group dares to do that, it always comes as a shock. And we need to struggle for understanding and for our own honest response. For the church to be about the work that Jesus did in poverty and under oppressive hatred is always to seek that unaccustomed stance. It's to be, stand, operate from the point of view of the world's victims and losers. It's to live and to preach the gospel from the bottom up. It's a falling down. It's a downward mobility into the commonality of human existence. And it's not nice. And it's not safe. And too often it's confrontational and conflictual. Because of such a stance, the church, while it is committed to and in the world, is always going to be at odds with the world as it is, always. The church, if it's truly doing its job, is always going to be a threat to the political and to the cultural status quo. The ramifications of that are many, and the stakes are huge. In any event, blessed are the troublemakers who speak about peace. Blessed are those who are willing to relinquish some measure of national, personal sovereignty for a sovereignty of another sort. Blessed are you, Paul and Martin, champions of the human race, servants of the Most High, revealers of the spiritual heart and core of the gospel. So the way of peace is always, always the razor's edge, the straight and narrow path that only a very few have found, and fewer still have taken the time and the trouble to walk it. Bless them. And pray that God will lead us to follow.
Listen, listen, listen.